because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws, too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned. Right to self-defense. They say you're safe, but they don't make sense. Dangerous ones will not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made. Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tapping to the Truth. Thank you for joining me. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all of the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. So, in case you haven't noticed, I've not exactly been around much this past week, and it wasn't anything that I had scheduled. So I've been a bit under the weather, and then just when I thought I was feeling a little better, so then right before time to go on the air Friday night, I got feeling bad again, and then I've missed out this Saturday and Sunday shows as well. This past Sunday, of course, being Easter. It was literally the first time since I joined BTR that I have missed an Easter, so I felt kind of bad about that. You know, it is one of those things. And right now, I'm actually taking a look at a message here. Yeah, you know, I love doing this stuff on air. I am very bad. I'm very bad at multitasking at this point, but I'm very happy to be back. And I'm just responding real quick. Yep, that's what I should do live on air. And I will be actually checking something real quick here as I go. And yeah, I'll get back on track now. Okay, so I've been MIA for a bit, and so this is exactly the way I should start coming back. And it's just been one thing after another, but I'm so happy to finally be back and be live with you guys. And want to give a special shout-out to Annie, the radio chick Ubellus, who was first one in the chat room tonight, beat out Chief by almost 2 full minutes. And of course, we had Chief has joined us now as well, and so far that's it. Kel's show came on immediately before this one started, and she and Nora have very many of the others who were over there have migrated over after this past week. Who knows? Maybe they don't even think I'm on the air tonight, which would be fine. But I'm going to have to check my schedule here. Evidently, Southern Sense Talk Radio is in need of a co-host, and I think I can make that happen. I will have to definitely make some quick checks before the end of the show. Hopefully I'll know, but if not, I will send you an email, Annie. I'm actually sending another message right now to make sure that I can do that. But as of right now, I would very much love to do exactly that. Been a while since I've been over on Southern Sense, and definitely have always enjoyed it. It's a blast over there. And I'll say once again, if you're not already listening to Southern Sense Talk Radio, what in the crap are you waiting for? One of the best talk radio shows out there, period. Just head over to southern-sense.com and pick your favorite way to listen to the show. And while I'm at it, let me go ahead and throw in a plug for Chief as well. He's the host of Simple Facts of Life, and he very graciously was going to join me this last Sunday. I've already discussed it with him, and he'll be joining me this coming Sunday instead for the Sunday live show, which if you're listening to KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority, then that means you'll actually get to hear that. The Sunday live show is divided up. I guess you'll probably hear that on Tuesday for you guys. All right. So anyway, what do you say I actually get started with the show instead of continuing to babble on? So here we are. So many things happened while I was out. And actually, it's such a nice day here, and just one more thing before I get started. Such a nice day right here in East Tennessee. I actually have all the windows open here in the studio. Normally, shut them up so there's not much background noise. I don't know how clearly you'll hear anything, but if vehicles are going by or what have you, you will get to hear that in the background possibly. So understand, that's not me playing with sound effects, and that's not me at a different location. That's just me trying to enjoy some fresh air as I'm still recuperating. But now, so many things happen. So many things going on that I'm never going to get caught up. So I'm going to try and sneak a few things in here and try to get at least two stories in. And the first half of the show, which is going to be even harder the longer I sit here and babble about it. And discuss some of the previous incidents that I have not had an opportunity to discuss. And I'll try to be caught up with all this wonderful stuff by Sunday. In the meanwhile, let's get started right into the thick of things here. This is one of these social justice warrior stories. No, this is actually a true justice story when a social justice warrior tried to commit a crime in the effort to hoax a crime. Yes, once again, the actor / singer, who I don't really like talking about that much anymore, has and the situation has been pushed to the point that I have to mention Mr. Jussie Smollett. Not so much about what Jussie's done, because his two buddies that he had paid tried to help him out with his little hate hoax. Well, they've decided it's time that they did a little pushback. So the two Nigerian-American brothers who helped Jussie carry out his hate hoax, now they've officially filed a suit against Smollett's Hollywood-based attorneys in federal court, and what they're alleging is defamation. According to CWB Chicago, the complaint filed in Chicago's federal courthouse seeks more than $75,000 each for the Sandero brothers. And they're targeting specifically Mark Garagos and Tina Glandian, as well as the Garagos and Garagos law firm specifically. The lawsuit not only accuses Smollett's attorneys of making defamatory claims that they believe went above and beyond merely advocating for their client in the public square, but outlines in a signified and sworn document how they helped Smollett carry out the alleged hate hoax. And that's what I'm calling it forevermore, hate hoax. anyway, within this document, they say that the whole thing was orchestrated by Smollett himself. Now, the two brothers alleged that Smollett paid them, quote, a sum of money, not specifying how much. I think we know because we've seen the check. It's out there. It's public knowledge. But in their official sworn statement, a sum of money to stage the attack to benefit Smollett himself. And then he directed every aspect of the attack, including the location and the noose. So he was very much staging. See, this is Jesse actually trying to pad his acting career resume. So, you know, he's done the acting, he's done the singing, he's done the dancing. Now he's trying to get proper credits for directing and producing. So he wants to be known as the ultimate all-around Hollywood threat. And that's the part that we keep missing here, right? That's what we're not getting. This wasn't a hate hoax as much as it was just an way off Broadway production. See, that's the way we should be looking at this, because it is absolutely ridiculous to this point that we're still hearing this man pretend to be innocent. His brother has stepped forward and come to his aid with this fantastical essay talking about how they've sat back and had to watch Jesse struggle as he's had his character impugned. Gee, really? I wonder why. Maybe because he has no character to speak of? Maybe because he legitimately tried to perform a hate hoax? Maybe there's good reason why your brother's character is being questioned, to be charitable. So anyway, the pair of brothers also, as they continue to make the point, they work as amateur professional trainers and nutritionists in Chicago, and they took bit parts in local television shows, and they managed to get bit parts on Empire as well. We've kind of talked about that in the past. So this is, of course, where they first connected with Smollett, and they contend that they were kind of cowed into the deal. Mr. Smollett used his clout as a wealthy actor to influence the plaintiffs, who were in a subordinate relationship to him and were aspiring to make it in Hollywood. So are the brothers almost insinuating that Jesse Smollett is the gay black version of... Well, no, I'm not going to go there. I thought about it. Probably shouldn't, because actually there is some other stuff in here that might lead in that direction. So let's continue on. So Mr. Smollett's motivation was simple. I'm quoting from the lawsuit now. Mr. Smollett's motivation was simple. He wanted his employer and the public to notice and appreciate him as a successful black openly gay actor. So Mr. Smollett directed every aspect of the attack, including the location and the noose. So after a few weeks of a Chicago Police Department investigation into what Smollett said was a racist and homophobic attack that took place outside of his apartment building in the lovely downtown Chicago neighborhood of Streeterville, the detectives... They're actually called detectives for a reason, and they came to the determination that Smollett himself was responsible for orchestrating the attack. The actor was arrested and charged with 17 criminal counts, most relating to filing a false police report with the Chicago Police Department. In a controversial move, and I think I'm being very charitable in that description, in a controversial move, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, they dropped the charges against Smollett in exchange for $10,000, the upfront of his bond, and 16 hours of community service, 16 hours, I might add, that he had actually already done before charges were filed, most of which was with Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. So, I don't know if it's even fair to call that community service done in exchange for these charges. Nobody else would have ever gotten a sweetheart deal like that. Nobody. But no admission of guilt on Smollett's part was required. So the brothers say that Smollett took the deal as evidence of his innocence, but that Smollett's lawyers continued to maintain in media appearances that the brothers were responsible for the attack. They actually also said that Smollett's attorney, Miss Glendia, going so far as to suggest that the two men may have been wearing whiteface to disguise their identities during the attack. In a press conference, the brothers' attorney, Gloria Schmidt, said that the continued attention has hurt the brothers' respective businesses and caused them untold emotional pain. Now, here's the long and short of it. At some point down the road here, this idea that the brothers may have actually been engaged in homosexual activity has come to the forefront. Now, given where the brothers' family still lives, it is actually a criminal offense that may even be punishable by stoning death. Let's see here. Hang on just a second. Oh, no, wait. That's not... What? Sorry, guys. I'm trying to deal with something here. And good grief. We have this whole new... we have this whole new chat room here at BTR. And unfortunately for us in the chat room, we don't have the ability anymore to kind of just ban or block people. In the process, we are getting a lot more trolls, especially those of us on the conservative side of the BTR process. And now they can more easily put video stuff in here. So there's going to be some complaints set to BTR about this. It is just absolutely ridiculous. So, sorry. Okay. And now I'm peeking back in the chat room, and Chief's like, the big question is, Tim recovered, or will he drop dead mid-show? Drop dead is looking more and more probable. Your bunker has windows. Now, I'm not actually in a bunker, Chief, surprisingly enough. So, at any rate, that's the grand scheme of things, is that this suggestion of the potential homosexual activity has made it dangerous for these brothers now to go back and visit family. This actually has affected them. Now, again, I don't want to sound overly what's a good word here? I don't want to sound overly sympathetic, because I'm not. They agreed to go along with it. They got paid to do this. I don't know exactly what they thought was going to come out of this. So, I mean, they committed this crime, and they should have been prepared for what would happen. But at the same time, this is just such an over-the-top thing. What is wrong with Jussie Smollett just sitting down and shutting up after he managed to get away with this really, really fortunate set of circumstances? Chief says all conservative talk show hosts broadcast from a bunker. Well, for the purposes of safety these days and the roaming bands of Antifa, that's usually the case. But I'm kind of out in the rural America, where the roaming bands of Antifa are not as much of an issue. So it's a little bit safer where I'm at, Chief. Now, where you're at, actually, out on the left coast, just about any place out that way, I would be very concerned about your safety, and you should probably have a panic room inside of your bunker where you're broadcasting from. But anyway, what would have been wrong with Smollett's lawyers and Smollett just saying, shh, that's it, enough, let's take the win and let's go? What would have been wrong with that? I don't understand. Why is that an issue? Why could you not just let it go? Seriously. All right. So at any rate, that's really about all I've got to say about that. This is a story we will be kind of keeping an eye on. We'll watch it moving forward. It should come to an interesting conclusion, because at this point, I don't understand why the feds are not swooping in and charging Jussie Smollett. There should be some federal repercussions since the state decided to close their eyes here. It's just the way it should be. All right. So let me go ahead and do the Edwards Notebook, and then we'll do the Songs and Stories for Soldiers, the Veterans Tip of the Day. Of course, it seems like it's getting louder outside, so I may have to close my windows after all. But let's do that real quick, and then we'll get to the next story, and hopefully I'll have time for at least one more thing. So stay with me, guys. I will be right back.
Is nationalism racist, or are those attacking nationalism racist? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards on today's page from the Edwards Notebook. To be nationalist means to appreciate the nation you were born in. It also means that you want your country to thrive, be strong, and have more opportunities for your children than you had. Nationalists often called racist because it is assumed that only white people like America and want her to be great. Many anti-nationalists love to tell black Americans that they are simple victims who just can't make it here in America because the deck is stacked against us. They are the same simpletons who convince some black people that the requirement to show an identification at the voting booth is racist because we blacks are supposed to be unable to get proper identification. Yet we can't drive or purchase a new washing machine without showing identification. So, my fellow Americans, who are the authentic racists? The nationalist who seeks to build upon America's finer attributes, including opportunities, are those telling black Americans you can only exist on lower standards than everyone else. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on AmericaMatters.us and 12 a.m. Sundays on Talk America Radio Network.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
Dan Perkins here for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. The VA recently reported that 70% of all veteran suicides are by vets who have never been to the VA. There's a saying, when a person's name is written down where people can see it, that person will never be forgotten. Many of our veterans, past and present, feel that nobody cares about them. We will be holding the first Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Memorial Tournament. All of the proceeds will go to purchase MP3 players for veterans. I know that veterans and their families all over the country will hear this announcement and not be able to play at the golf outing, but want to help. So here's your veteran's tip of the day. If you have a family member or a friend that is a veteran, for $100 you can honor them and make sure they will never be forgotten. Go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us and sponsor a tea or a green in their name. Keep their memory alive. This has been your veteran's tip of the day.
All right, boys and girls, thank you very much for staying with me through the break. I want to give a quick shout-out to Vorpal Byte, who's joined us in the chat room. Glad to have you with us tonight, Vorp. And we'll continue with the conversation. Second big story, well, it's not a big story, which is why I want to cover it. It's one of the things that I like doing. I like looking at stuff that is noteworthy but typically kind of gets blown by most talk shows and most mainstream media because it doesn't fit into the narrative usually. And this is one of those social justice warrior stories where the social justice warriors are actually being put in their place. Seems that there's some students that have been trying to get some famous professors fired, and the smackdown was delivered. So over the course of the last 2 weeks, there's been two university presidents who have issued strong rebukes of attempts by activist students to fire or silence high-profile university professors with whom they disagree. Last Tuesday, the president of George Mason University issued a statement to the students calling for the firing of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, informing them that while it may be painful to some of them, standing behind their three-year contract with Kavanaugh as a teacher is, quote, very, very important for the integrity of the university. Okay, so even that is still a bit of a cop-out, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that. The statement should have been firmer. You don't have to be harsh, but the statement should have been firmer. The statement should have been more along the lines of, well, we signed a contract, and if we want to be considered a university with integrity, we have to honor that contract. No. The statement should have been made, Brett Kavanaugh was hired to teach because he is an expert in the field, and as such, he has the right to be here. We tapped him for this position because of his expertise, because of his resume, and because of what he has done. And if this is painful for some of you, don't take the class. That should have been the statement. That should have been made clear, because here's the deal, and I've been saying this a lot recently. When it comes to these protests going on campus, students should have a voice on campus. They should. But at the end of the day, the administration is supposed to be running the college, not the students. There's too many members of faculty that already have this estranged idea, that have already been through the indoctrination process, that is utterly insane to try and get a consensus on campus. The very notion, the concept that there's conservative voices anywhere on a college campus is such a rarity that it's almost laughable when somebody says it out loud. Even traditionally conservative colleges, if it's part of the private and public sector domain, unless you're talking about someplace not even Liberty. It's in Michigan. I can't even think of the name now. I'm drawing a freaking blank all of a sudden. But Hillsdale, that's the place. I knew I'd come up. Unless you're talking about Hillsdale, there simply aren't any universities that have a very strong conservative presence. Now, there's a few that do have them, but that should still be it. If you're going to be a university, you need to be exactly that. So that being said, okay, I'm still going to give a little bit of a hat tip towards George Mason for not kowtowing to the social justice warriors that were crying that Brett Kavanaugh is such an evil rapist, which, of course, we all know he is. They just couldn't prove it. Brett Kavanaugh was colluding with rapists in high school, and I believe they were Russian rapists. The real question is the evidence in the room with us now? Can you see the evidence now? Or is the evidence here? Anyway. So a few days after that, the president of the University of the Arts told activists on his campus that they would not be allowed to suppress free speech on his campus by ousting longtime faculty member and famous anti-feminist Camille Pegula. Now, Pegula, of course, and I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, by the way, but she's been one of those strong feminist voices for a long time, and she has been one of those really kind of leading the charge for feminists against the trans agenda. She's come under a lot of fire from her fellow progressives, or as I usually say, so-called progressives, for pushing back against the transgender and the hashtag MeToo movements. This, of course, has resulted in the student-led petition for her to be fired by the University of the Arts. But despite their best efforts to get rid of this threat to their thought process, this actually a fellow traveler, if you will, one of the leaders of the feminazi movement, who simply recognizes a very basic truth, that being that men and women are not the same thing, and biologically speaking cannot be, Ooh, see that? That's the kind of thing that gets you fired. That's the main reason why there's not a lot of terrestrial radio stations knocking down my door, because I'll say it. And, of course, that it's not that they disagree. It's that it leads to such bad, bad publicity. Most universities just dropped it. But in an open letter to the students, to the faculty, and to the staff posted back on April 10th, UArts President David Yeager made painfully clear that the activists weren't going to be allowed to silence this famous professor. Yeager begins by reaffirming that the university's core values and our commitment to rigorous critical inquiry in support of our mission of advancing human creativity, our core value on integrity and diversity is clear. We are a supportive community committed to individual and artistic integrity and inclusion. We promote and respect self-expression, a wide range of ideas and diversity in all its forms. So basically, the core value that he's suggesting is under pressure by the increasing lack of civility in debate and by those who seek to suppress speech with each whatever speech with which that they disagree. So going back to the letter, quoting again, unfortunately, as a society, we are living in a time of sharp divisions of opinions, perspectives, and beliefs. And that has led to decreased civility, increased anger, and a new normal of offense given and taken. He continues saying, across our nation, it is all too common for opinions expressed that differ from another's, especially those that are controversial, can spark passion and even outrage, often resulting in calls to suppress that speech. But Yeager stresses that, quote, simply cannot be allowed to happen. You know, I got to admit, it sounded like he was building up to some kind of little flame out, not all that dissimilar to the George Mason bit. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to stand up for our decision, but I'm going to say it in a way where I hope you'll understand. Nah, he's actually kind of very forceful. He was speaking in their language initially, which is part of what makes this so effective. Continuing with what he wrote, he says, quote, I firmly believe that limiting the range of voices in society erodes our democracy. He continues by saying, universities, moreover, are at the heart of the revolutionary notion of free expression. Promoting the free exchange of ideas is part of the core reason for their existence. How about that, guys? How about the idea that there is a college or a university president left in this country outside of Hillsdale that still understands the idea of free expression, that still understands that part of their job is to expose these kids to new ideas, to expose these young adults still woefully lacking life experience, to expose them to people that will challenge their ideas, challenge their way of thinking, and not just step back and support the same leftist indoctrination dribble. That while he may subscribe to it himself, while everyone on campus may subscribe to it, that he's not going to simply sit back and say, you guys are running the asylum. And he actually makes the case, a case that traditional liberals used to make. You know, not this, we're going to suppress speech, we're going to suppress speech, we're going to suppress speech. Oh, that's hate speech. That's hate speech. Oh, you're a bigot. You're a phobe. Insert whatever description you want to before the phobe. No, 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 no. He says that this is the way it is, ladies and gentlemen, and this is what college and university is for. Welcome to America. So Yeager then underscores the importance of defending the, quote, open interchange of opinions and beliefs, and also stating, quote, fostering a climate conducive to respectful intellectual debate that empowers and equips our students to meet the challenges they will face in the future. These values, he says, are particularly important in art schools. Artists over the centuries have suffered censorship and even persecution for the expression of their beliefs through their work. My answer is simple. Not now. Not at UArts. So, you know what? I'm going to give the guy a full hat tip. I think he has done quite a bit. It's a phobia. Phobias scare me. Chief. I love you. Chief in the chat room says, I'm a phobia phobe. Phobias scare me. I love it. Okay, so, you know, it's such a good thing just to hear this coming from a university, quite honestly. Because I've been saying for a while now, and those of you who are fairly regular listeners, you've heard me say this more than once, we're past the point of letting the students run the universities. The administrators have a responsibility. You have to be part of what's going on, or you don't get the full experience. And of course, I'm talking from a student perspective right now. You have to be involved in groups, and you have to have your little cliques, but you have to have the thought process challenged. I mean, I've always kind of thought that a university professor, their job is actually to challenge whatever the student's viewpoint is, regardless of if they agree with that viewpoint or not. You know, playing devil's advocate, putting up the notion, the concept is that you realize that once you leave university, you're going to be going out into a world where people aren't going to think like you. You realize that you're going to be going out into a world where you may have to defend, at least to yourself, why you believe the things you believe. You don't necessarily have to be a keyboard warrior. You don't necessarily have to be at a protest shouting down people or running around along with the Antifa hordes. But you have to be prepared to, at least in your own mind, defend your beliefs. Question, if you're not prepared to critically think about what it is that you claim to believe in, then there is no point, none, to even going to college. And I understand that this modern age, especially given what the costs are, there is a strong case to be made not to go to college anyway. There really is. Not everybody who goes to college is really college material in the first place. You can get a jump start on an actual career if you go through internships. I mean, there's a lot of common sense pathways to having a productive and comfortable, quite honestly, life if you choose a path. But the point still comes back that for so long now, we've had college professors and college presidents and college chancellors that have stood back and they've seen these kids rise up and they've fanned the flames of protest and they've indoctrinated the leftist ideologies to the point that they want to encourage them even more, to the point that there's several colleges out there where the students literally are running everything. And that's why the curriculum is so messed up as well. She says the problem is that students today don't realize that. They're being taught that everyone who isn't deplorable agrees with them. And you're right. We are the deplorables. We are the smelly Walmart people. And the students need to be taught the exact opposite of that. It's like, it used to be an experience to go to college. Outside of the education, there was the experience. And that experience was you met people very different from the people that you were around in your community where you came from. You know, that was the idea. That was the notion. Now, obviously, that wasn't always the case, especially if you were from a fancy, fancy neighborhood because your parents were extremely wealthy. And then you're going to an Ivy League school where you're pretty much surrounded by other people from the exact same kind of environment that you came from, where the biggest controversy is whether or not it's appropriate to have Hispanic or Asians as the hired help. But the biggest controversies are whether or not it's more appropriate to be on the French Riviera or to be in Aspen for the winter. It's just ridiculous. The rest of us were supposed to be having this great opportunity to meet different people that we've never been exposed to before and come into contact with new ideas and then prepare ourselves for what it was going to be like when we had to go out and stand on our own. And that's another thing that's missing, quite honestly. Not a lot of students are actually being taught that there's going to be a day where they're going to have to stand on their own. There is going to come a day where you're going to be expected to make it on your own strength, to build on your own merit, and stand on the quality of your effort and your work. Now, I suppose if you're from a wealthy enough family, that day might not actually ever come. I suppose that's a possibility. And you know what? That's good for you, but that's not the case for most of us. And unfortunately, that's still the type of hokum that most students, even before they get to college now, are being taught. They're being indoctrinated to. So there you have it. All right, now as far as some of the things I didn't get a chance to comment about, let's start with the Mueller report. I haven't read it yet. I've been not well, and I haven't read it, but here's what I've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed. I will read it, and I'll have a more in-depth conversation if it's still topical at that point. But what I absolutely love is that we predicted it, we called it, we knew it was going to be the case. Here's the deal. Nothing to go after Trump about. Democrats aren't happy. More investigations to follow. And I say keep it up, guys. Keep up. The vast majority of the American public is ready for this to be done. So you just keep coming on, guys. You just keep doing the stuff that the majority of America really doesn't want you to do, and see how well that turns out for you in the 2020 election cycle. I hope, I pray, and I would really love for Maxine Waters to get together with Schiff and for them to go ahead and try to impeach Donald Trump, because that would almost guarantee not only a Trump reelection, but a red wave in both the House and possibly a few more seats picked up in the Senate. So that's what I'm looking forward to, and I certainly hope that that they do continue exactly that. And that's really about all I have to say, because like I said, I can't really comment too much about the report itself. It's just the Democrats are so silly. If there was enough evidence to charge for obstruction of justice, the impeachment would already be underway. Okay, so they know. They know they don't have anything, but they just can't let it go. And so continue. Like I said, we'll talk more in depth a little later after I've had a chance to actually read it. Now, about the Sri Lanka terrorist attack. I know you guys have heard this said by other commentators by now, but, you know, I can't help it. I've got to say something. Is there a new rule in the American media, and particularly in the Democratic lexicon, that says that you can't utter the word Christian when it comes to them being an obvious victim, a targeted victim of violence and hatred? I mean, is that a rule now? I mean, this whole Easter worshipers bit, exactly who worships on Easter? Now, You could make the claim technically on those occasions when the Passover falls exactly on with Easter, which it does quite often. There's usually a pretty big overlap. You can say that there's more than one group that's worshiping on Easter, but they're not actually worshiping Easter, are they? The Jews are observing their tradition of Passover. And of course, it makes a lot of sense that they overlap because guess what? The whole Last Supper was supposed to be a Passover Seder. So, you know, that's what was going on. Let's not forget that Jesus Christ was a Jew. Okay, so the Jewish people shall observe the Passover. And there you have it. Chief right now in the chat room is sharing a link to Babylon Bee, which is a great, great site, by the way. If you guys actually enjoy a little satire, it's certainly worth going. Talking about Hillary Clinton's shouts Easter worshipers at the Wheel of Fortune puzzle. And it really is. But, you know, Hillary probably did the worst tweet involving it because when you look at the comparison to what happened in New Zealand, and how that was cut up. Now Barack Obama did something not that dissimilar, but I don't think his was quite as bad based on what they tweeted out about what occurred to the Muslim community in New Zealand in comparison to what happened to these Christians. But you know, here's the fun thing. I mean, it's pretty straightforward here, guys. Christians in particular, they're not part of the intersectionality coalition. They're not part of the American targeted communities. You can't be, because for far too long they were in charge. That's why you can't be racist against white people. Now, that's how they think. You can't be racist against white people. Oh, white people, they're in charge. Really? And it's so ridiculous. Sorry, I was peeking back in the chat room. You guys can tell when I do that, I'm pretty sure. But it is so absolutely ridiculous that this happened. And here's the deal. They don't want to talk about it. The whole premise of the Intersectionality Coalition is who are the targeted minorities who face oppression in the Americas. So obviously Christians and Jews don't belong on the list either, and white people, regardless, don't belong there. And now I've even heard lately, I was reading an article earlier towards the middle of last week saying that now black men are almost as bad as white women as far as the intersectionality is concerned. You're on the coalition hierarchy, but you're way down near the bottom now. So, you know, you've got to be a gay, transgender Muslim from Uganda to be at the tippy top. You know, you've got to have so many different things going on. And it's just ridiculous. Never mind the fact that the most victimized group within the United States are American Jews, and worldwide the most victimized group. And this is according to Pew Research, by the way. This is not me just making this up. I know somebody's going to say, oh, you just made that up. No, this is according to Pew. You can look it up. Worldwide, Christians are the most victimized group because around the world, and this isn't even per capita, okay? I'm not having to even adjust numbers. The raw numbers make it clear. Around the world, nobody is more persecuted than Christians. America is like one of the few places that Christians are relatively safe, although the Intersectionality Coalition is trying to undo that. But guys, it was Christians who were targeted. Christians that were targeted by an Islamic faction. The group responsible for the murder of nearly 300 people, with several injured and still in harm's way, they admitted, they have come forward, they've claimed responsibility, and they admitted that this was in fact retribution for the New Zealand attack. Well, this Sri Lanka, this is a case where the country itself has a Muslim population of just under 10%. It's 9 point something something. So they're not exactly a majority. It's still majority Hindu. But at just under 10% population, they now feel confident enough to commit acts of terroristic jihad against the minority, the true minority within the nation. How long till we see similar actions taking place in the West? Guess what? Depending on where you're looking, we already see it. We have no-go zones all around the freaking Western civilization, all throughout Western Europe, here in the North America, here in the U.S. and in Canada. We have it going on a fairly regular basis, but the media works really hard to keep as much of it quiet as they can. You literally have to listen to shows like this and Kells and the rest of the Global Patriot Network. And Chief's show, sometimes he'll delve into this, although usually he tries to keep his stuff a bit lighter and more directed at American politics specifically. And, of course, over at Annie's show, and you can hear that quite often. But regardless of all that, if you're not listening to independent sources, you're probably not. Even Fox News gets hush-hush about this kind of news story. They don't want to talk about it. And that's where we're left at. And I'm looking at the clock, and you know what? I'm quickly running out of time, so I guess I better kind of coalesce my ideas here. I've got less than 8 minutes left, guys. Where has the time gone? These one-hour shows really, really kind of hit me when I'm used to doing the two-hour bit. But I am starting to feel a bit warmish in here, so I'm glad it's only 1 hour tonight. Here's the real deal. You know, you got folks like the Washington Post. Instead of reporting on the facts on the ground about what happened in Sri Lanka, no, they want to talk about how right-wing Americans fueled anger over this. And how some right-wing commentators took this as yet more proof that Christians are under attack around the world. Why wouldn't you? I want to know who it is that's not taking this as evidence, because guess what? This is another instance of Christians being attacked. Even the hotels, they weren't targeted because they were hotels. They were targeted because these were hotels that were offering a special Easter meal. You know, that's the one thing that the hotels that were targeted had in common. This was an attack against Christianity, members of the church specifically. Worldwide, Christians are the most endangered group. And it's not just oppression. It is literally attack and assault. It is destroy. It is kill. There is no group that is oppressed more worldwide. But we just can't say that in America, can we? We have to make the story about something else. We have to find a way to flip the script. Oh, yes, this is a terrible, terrible tragedy that happened there. But, oh, look how the right-wingers are acting here because of it. Well, some people maybe did go over the top. Some people probably did say some things that the rest of us would be kind of like, that might be a bridge too far. But at the end of the day, nothing changes the fact that this was an attack on Christians, directed at Christians, directed as a response to a white supremacist leftist who was trying to trigger a race war in the United States. This is literally just an excuse. And I have to tell you, when it comes to the Islamists, and you have to understand the terminology here, not every Muslim is an Islamist, okay? Not every person who claims to be a Muslim actually believes in the full tenets taught throughout the Quran. They don't take every single word to heart that Muhammad had to say, because if they did, they would all be Islamists, and they would all be out to kill or convert every single non-Muslim. If you got a Muslim friend who tolerates you and your lack of being a Muslim, and they're genuine about it, then they're not an Islamist. So understand, an Islamist is someone who embraces the full and darkest aspects of what was taught by the so-called prophet. Islamists are every bit as dangerous as any white supremacist has ever been. Islamists commit more acts of terrorism, commit more acts of violence, commit more murders every single year than white supremacists have in the last decade combined. Don't believe me? Fine. Look it up. But make sure that you check multiple sources and make sure that you're verifying that, unlike our school shooting statistics, that your source isn't also counting suicides that took place in parking lots of a place that hasn't been a school in a decade. Because that's some of the folks that got counted in with those statistics. Make sure you know what is being included in your statistics. But even then, with those kind of stretches, they'd be hard-pressed to come to any other there's no other conclusion to come to. Easter is supposed to be a time of reflection and rejoicing, because Easter is the reason Christianity exists in the first place. Everybody loves Christmas, but Christmas wouldn't mean anything without the Resurrection Sunday. They were Christians that were targeted, and it was specific. We're supposed to be all nice, and we're supposed to stop military actions on Islamic holidays when we're fighting fights in Islamic countries. And we did under George W. and previous, because we acknowledge a moment of faith. But every Christian holiday is just another day that we can be targeted by those who seek to do us harm, because they believe ultimately in their own superiority and that we must either submit or die. Again, not every Muslim is an Islamist, but every Islamist is a threat to the American way of life. All right, so that's going to have to be it for today. As I said, I'm quickly running out of time. I want to thank everybody for being here. Obviously, Annie took off. She had her fill of the troll. Chief hung out all the way through. Vorpalbite was here and then bounced out. Obviously, a little tired. Thanks to you guys, and thanks to everybody else who's listening. And for those of you who are listening to KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority, thank you so much for joining me as I bring a little East Tennessee flavor to Utah's Talk Authority. That's it for now, but I will be back tomorrow, so unless I have to call in dead. The plan is to be here. Thank you so much. But remember, regardless of everything else, don't take my word for it. Definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in a little bit of effort, but more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for me, guys. I'm out.
Gone was the world. is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family.
Using both hands.